Hello, everyone. Welcome to week 11 of Montana's 69th legislative session. My name is Gabby Crevett. I'm the communications director with the Montana Democratic Party. Today, I have a very special guest and co-host with us, Tiffany Williams. Tiffany is the very talented development director with the Montana Democratic Party. Tiffany, thank you so much for co-hosting today.
Thank you so much for having me. I've obviously been loving the show so far, and I think that this is a really great way to deliver information to Montanans. So I'm glad we're doing this.
Well, thanks again for joining us. So we're back after transmittal break in the full swing of things. But before we dive in, I want to make sure that you and everybody listening sticks around for our interview at the end of the show. It's with Shannon and Margie McDonald, who's a former lawmaker and the former executive director of Big Sky 55 Plus. So stick around for the end of the show. It's going to be a great interview. I think you'll really enjoy it. So Tiffany, before we begin, let's zoom out from the legislature for a moment because we had some really big national news break this week. On Thursday, President Trump signed an executive order calling to eliminate the United States Department of Education. So you're a parent, you're an actively engaged concerned citizen. What are your initial thoughts on this?
It's been so wild to watch this. I know that it's been something that was on Trump's agenda. It was in Project 2025, but to actually see it take effect and know the ways that it's going to hurt Montana schools, parents, and communities has just been really upsetting and demoralizing. And I think that a lot of people have a lot of concerns, and they have every right to. I was watching Ryan Zinke was on NBC Montana this morning, today's Friday, and he was talking about how this actually won't affect any Montanans, or it'll hardly affect any Montanans because we don't have a lot of racial diversity here in Montana. And that's so upsetting because there are so many things that the Department of Education does. Obviously, protecting students who come from various races, cultures, and backgrounds is one of them. But the Department of Education also helps students who are, you know, who come from areas that are in poverty. I think a lot of rural Montana schools exist in that paradigm. And I don't think that Ryan Zinke has a real understanding of what's happening on the ground here in Montana. I know that my kids, we go to Florence, and those schools operate with a shoestring budget. And so they do the very best that they can to serve all students, regardless of their socioeconomic background, regardless of their race, regardless of their different intellectual abilities. And for Ryan Zinke to say what he said this morning is upsetting to everyone who wants those students to be served with the same quality of care that comes from the Department of Education. Here we have all sorts of title protections from all sorts of different kinds of students, or for all sorts of different kinds of students. And, you know, their ability to be served is really in danger now because of this decision from Trump that Ryan Zinke is supporting.
So I know you really studied Project 2025. What is this obsession with cutting the Department of Education? Like, why? What is this obsession with that?
Yeah, I don't know if a lot of people are making the connection between removing resources for public education and putting those resources into private education. And that's really a lot of what the point of this is. We see that happening all over the country where all of a sudden states are allowing private schools to get public funding. And it's no longer public dollars for public schools. It's public dollars for whatever way that a private citizen wants to be served. And I think that that really diminishes the ability of our schools to serve our students. You know, our public schools are really the heartbeat of our communities. They serve everyone. There's no barrier to get in. They provide services that maybe people can't get at home. And so again, education funding for people with disabilities, school lunches, the ability to, you know, play sports and participate in a social activity, all of that is available through our public schools. And you see that when you go to, you know, a high school basketball game or a middle school band concert or an elementary school fair, for example. And so I think that we're going to continue to see our schools stretched thin and diminished the more money that we put into the private education.
Well, it sounds like Montana State Superintendent took off to Washington, D.C. yesterday to watch Trump sign the executive order. And she said, she's, quote, ready to take on a stronger role in distributing the funds and supporting our schools with those federal programs, end quote. So, Tiffany, you were saying you saw Zinke on NBC Montana this morning. I know you saw him yesterday on CNN. He is really just coming out saying he totally supports the cutting of the Department of Education, echoing calls to let states run federal budgets. So when I see these interviews, I have questions myself. I'm sure you have questions as a parent. And these questions are really important questions that the Montana Press Corps should be asking every single one of our leaders in Congress. And that first question is, will this move cut federal funding for public education in Montana? And if so, by how much? The second question should be, how can you ensure programs like Title I and special education will continue to receive proper funding? And then finally, are Republicans really suggesting that the same Office of Public Instruction that's chronically understaffed and got caught last year misspending $67 million in federal funding, do we really think that office is up for the task? I think Montanans deserve answers, and it is incumbent upon our reporters to be asking these questions to every single one of our congresspeople in Washington.
I couldn't agree more. And what I will say is that if you are somebody who is curious about how money is being spent at your local public school, there's no better way to participate in public accounting than to go to your local school board. They will show you their budget. They have monthly school board meetings that are open to the public. And so I'm sure if somebody thinks that there is money being misspent at our Montana public schools, if they would give their time and their energy to their public school, I'm sure that they would appreciate that service. I'm sure that if there's lots of money that is being misused, I'm sure that they would appreciate knowing how it is, because I participate in my kids' public school, and I know that they operate so well and so efficiently on the shoestring budget that they are given, and that they work really hard. And so, I mean, again, if Ryan Zinke says that there's, loads of wasteful fraud happening in our Montana public schools, maybe he should start with that $67 million that the Office of Public Instruction was not accountable for, that it just kind of disappeared into the ether, and they did not account for it. And so maybe that's the waste and fraud that he should be concerned about. But here on the ground here in Montana, I mean, these people are really in the trenches of trying to figure out how to serve so many different needs with so few resources. And that's where the Department of Education matters. That's where the Department of Education can say, yes, we want every student here in America to be served with the same quality. And here's how we're going to do that, and here's how we're going to implement that. And so, I mean, I agree with you. I'm very skeptical that our new superintendent of public instruction really understands and cares about what's happening on the ground here in local schools in Montana, and how now we are even more in danger of being underserved and being able to fulfill the needs of this future generation. I think everybody has a right to be concerned, and it worries me that she's not.
Yeah. Well, on that note, let's transition to the Montana legislature. Tiffany, I know you are following. Are there any bills in particular that you are following this week?
Yeah, there's quite a few actually. So one of the ones that I really care about, and I just want to shout out Senator Shane Morjo, is that SB 224 would recognize Indigenous Peoples Day on the second Monday in October, and it would be recognized as an official holiday. Right now, that day is called Columbus Day, and this would really shift the focus from Columbus to the people who, actually, quote unquote, discovered America, or were already living here. And I think it would also really highlight the contribution of the Native American way of life, their culture. We have a lot to learn from the First Peoples, and I think that this recognizing Indigenous Peoples Day is a great way to push that forward. And I think what's so interesting about it is that it's getting a lot of traction this legislative session. More people are paying attention to this bill. And I'm really glad for that, because this bill actually came up back in 2023 during the legislative session then. And Shane really got, I would say, he was not treated well because he proposed this bill. It got slapped down really quickly. And some things were said during that legislative session that, you know, really broke my heart. I mean, I know the place that this is coming from is a really good place. And I think that Shane bringing this bill back and knowing that maybe this crop of legislators are, you know, a bit more willing to work together than previous legislative sessions. Democrats have always been willing to work with Republicans, but that has not always been the case from our Republican representatives. And so I'm just so glad that Senator Morgeau recognized that that the conversation didn't need to end, and that this bill is getting more traction, and that hopefully here in Montana, we will recognize the contributions of the Native Americans who live here, who we could learn from, and this bill is possibly going to pass this time. Makes me really happy.
Great.
Another bill that I'm interested in that I'm watching right now is Representative Jonathan Carlin's property tax bill, HB 154. This is something that we overwhelmingly heard from Montanans. We've heard about it for the past, you know, few years, especially because here in Montana, we saw a sudden surge of home buyers, and that really made property taxes so much more expensive. The Republicans in the legislative session in 2023 didn't want to do anything about that. And so we have been stuck paying unreasonably high property taxes here in the state of Montana. So this bill would provide a much needed tax credit to working homeowners and renters, because renters pay property taxes as a pass-through fee on their rent. And so this would provide some relief for both of those groups. The average homeowner shouldn't pay the same rate as the owner of a $1 million mansion. That just is something that just doesn't make sense. And so HB 154 is going to fix that. It offers renters and homeowners a tax credit to keep their housing expenses affordable and within a reasonable range. And it's going to provide some much needed relief.
So Tiffany, I'm surprised to see there's a Republican sponsored bill allowing former legislators and appointed staff to immediately become lobbyists. That bill passed on the Senate floor. It's moving right along. And I know for better or for worse, the term lobbyist really leaves a bad taste in people's mouths. So it's strange to see this bill have the traction it has. Not sure what you're thinking about it.
Yeah, I think what's so interesting is that lobbyists have really been kind of spotlighted in this legislative session, especially lately. I think it was about 3 weeks ago that a representative from Ravalli County, where I live, his name is Ron Marshall, just up and quit the legislature. He just said, peace out, I'm out of here. And he was really upset because he felt like tobacco lobbyists were getting more of a say in the legislature than, for example, people who represent the vaping industry. And so I think that you could infer a lot of things from that. But one thing that I find really interesting is that there are so many people who are talking about lobbyists right now, and yet this bill is really moving fast through the legislature. To me, it makes sense to have guardrails around lobbyists and how much time and energy and resources we are giving to people who are being paid to lobby for things, rather than hearing from, you know, constituents like you and I directly. And so I think it's interesting that this conversation is happening. I want to see where it goes. And I think if nothing else, the fact that we are talking about lobbyists right now is probably a good thing, because there probably should be some guardrails around that.
And for those of you keeping score at home, that is Senate Bill 222. And I was actually scrolling through X the other day, and I saw Bozeman Representative Kelly Corridum tweet about this bill. He said SB 222 would overturn the ban on elected officials in Montana becoming lobbyists immediately after serving in office. It's a bad bill, and it should feel bad. So Definitely not popular among all our leaders in Helena, but anyways, that certainly caught my eye this week. So Tiffany, there were some education-related bills that received hearings this week as well.
That's right. Melissa Romano's HB 551 would remove the reduced price co-payments for school lunch and breakfast. This one feels like a no-brainer. It would provide students with nutrition so they can reach their full education potential and reduce administrative barriers to getting kids fed.
So we have a clip from the hearing. Let's hear it from Representative Romano herself.
This is all about hunger. Some of you may remember that I brought a bill last session as well about feeding kids. This is a bill about feeding kids. Hunger, we know, is not confined to certain regions or populations in our state. It exists in every corner, from our largest cities to our smallest towns. 1 in 6 children in Montana live in a food insecure household, meaning nearly 40,000 children do not consistently have enough to eat. When children experience hunger, the consequences are far-reaching: impaired cognitive development, lower academic achievement, increased absenteeism, and long-term health issues.
Gabby, I think the reason that Representative Romano's bill is so important is because, again, it goes back to the resources that we're providing to our schools to help our future generation excel. And I think that the barriers that are in place, especially for parents who live in poverty or maybe are located in a food desert, our schools are helping our families overcome those barriers. And so again, you know, going back to kind of the beginning of our conversation, this is why education is so important. This is why helping people all have the same access to resources, whether it be, you know, quality learning or food in their bellies, is going to have a positive impact on Montana in the future. And we always need to be looking forward to what we want our state to look like, not just where we are right now. So there's a couple of Republican bills that I wanted to flag as well. And those are HB, House Bill 821 and 822. So what these bills would do is revise the vote requirement to enact a constitutional initiative and legislative referendum by increasing the threshold to 60%. So what we have now is if a group wants to come forward and put something on our ballot when we vote, they have to go through some different channels in order to do that. But if they achieve that, they're able to put something on the ballot. And what we've seen is in 2024, Montanans approved CI 128 to create a constitutional right to abortion. And that happened with 58% of the vote. Back in 2020, Montana voters approved a cannabis legislation with 57% of the vote. Under the proposed HB 821 and HB 822, none of those changes would have been made to the Montana Constitution. They want to increase the threshold so that it makes it even harder for Montanans to exercise their will. And we've seen this happen in other states like Florida. In Florida, they have to have 60% of the vote in order to enact a constitutional amendment. And, you know, you've really seen people not be able to reach that threshold and then not be able to have the majority vote count. So we definitely don't want that to happen here in the state of Montana. We don't want HB 821 and 822 to go into effect. And so we're really hoping that enough Republicans will oppose those two bills so that we can continue to have the majority vote be the majority say in our state.
It is just incredible. Republicans will stop at absolutely nothing to ignore the will of Montanans, to impose their own radical and extreme agenda on the rest of us. And it is truly astonishing. It is very upsetting to see throughout the session the multiple ways Republicans are trying to limit the will of Montanans. So Tiffany, I want to thank you again for being on the show. I'm sure everybody's really glad to hear your voice. Thank you for joining us. And stick around. Listen to the interview Shannon did with Margie McDonald. It's super interesting. I know you're going to love it. Thanks again for being here, Tiffany.
Thank you, Gabby. This was a lot of fun.
Well, Margie McDonald, we are thrilled to have you here today. Welcome to the Blue Bench Podcast.
It's always good to see you, Shannon.
Thanks very much. So Margie, you have a great background to help us see through your lens. I've been really excited about this recording. But before we launch into some of the specific questions about the legislative session, can you give us a background on Big Sky 55 Plus and tell us what that's about and a little history there?
Yeah, sure. Big Sky 55 Plus is an organization of older adults, Montanans, 55 and over, who come together to bring Montanans together to find solutions that make life better for Montanans of all ages. And that's very much a part of our mission, is to understand that we're an advocacy group and certainly do advocate for older adults, but we see our platform and our vision is that is done in the holistic context of community. And so we are happy to come in on things like right to work, public education, young families, a whole host and array of issues, clean and healthful environment, protecting our constitution. So we have kind of a broad platform, which is available on our website. We're new. We've only been around since 2018. And one of the ways in which we engage, we certainly have an educational mission, which is to help counter, especially in this age of kind of news desert, and then an ecosystem full of misinformation and disinformation. We see having high quality, good information for public education as part of our mission. We also have always felt that it's important to advocate in the electoral space and to support lawmakers and elected officials who have our backs, and to elect people who will be champions. So that's a piece of who we are. And we have a PAC. We are a C4, not a C3, although we do a lot of work that would qualify as a C3, and we can take some tax deductible donations as well. So that's a little bit about us. And we have about a list of about 3,000 active members, and we're hoping to grow.
That's great. That's great. I like the idea that you are working, you know, in kind of more typical lanes, but also protecting and working toward supporting candidates and legislators who are taking risks, who are, you know, voting their conscience and doing that. That's seems somewhat unique. So you've experienced years of legislative sessions. What year was your first session?
I came here in 2009, which was an interesting year because it was the year we had a $1 billion surplus in July. And by the time we got in 2008, and then of course the crash happened, the setback or whatever they call it. And by the time we got there in 2009, the housing market had cratered and the economy was in a tailspin, and we were, you know, looking at deficits all over the place. So I've lived it and seen how that can be. And then I served through 2019. So I had 12 years in the legislature, because I basically termed out at the end of that, which would have been 2020.
So you've served both as a representative and as a senator.
Right. 8 years in the House, 4 years in the Senate.
Yeah. And what committees did you serve on?
Well, in the House, I was always on, all my time in the legislature, I was always on judiciary, which is a really interesting, but sometimes brutal committee. And then I was in leadership a lot. So oftentimes I only had one other committee. In the House, I often was on transportation and agriculture. In the Senate, I was on agriculture and local government. So in addition.
Okay, great. And you know,
I often ask this question of guests who have experienced many years, many legislative sessions. It feels like every session is different. Every session has its own flavor and is very unique. And how does this legislative session, the 2025 session, feel different to you than other sessions?
I have been thinking about that, and one thing it seems to me is that even though they've had the majority party, the Republican Party, have been in the majority now for many years and had a supermajority in the last session, and even though they have started off this session with some internal conflict, as they, you know, as whenever you're the largest tent, you're going to have different factions within that tent, and we've seen that. One thing that seems to me different is I don't think that leadership is asserting any kind of controls around what they're allowing in terms of legislation. So what I guess what kind of I think has shocked some people who've been around, like some of the lobbyists in the hallway and people like me who've served, you know, who've been around the legislature now for almost 15 years, that bills keep getting resurrected. There'll be a really bad bill. It'll have a lifespan. People will, you know, muster the votes to kill it. And then there's another zombie bill that pops up in the other house, or sometimes even in the same house, and leadership just sends it to another committee. And so the same stakeholders have to come back to Helena and try and kill this zombie bill again. And just, it's been kind of interesting in that regard, even though that is one way in which it's different, is it just seems to me that it was used oftentimes was a kind of something that was self-regulated, that through leadership, through committee chairs, I think through having some kind of exercising some degree of you know, internal, you know, controls within the caucuses about how to do that. And I feel like there's just such a flood of bills. So that was a characteristic in some respects. This session really surprised me in terms of the consensus that came around our continued access to healthcare, Medicaid in Montana for adults, low-income adults. And that was a big surprise. I think all of us went in thinking it was gonna be a steep hill and that at the end of the day, there would be all kinds of bloodletting and deal-making to keep healthcare for Montanans, to keep hospitals open, to keep the thousands of jobs that law sustains. So those are a couple.
Well, and it is March 20th, and the governor has yet to sign that bill, unless it's happened in the last 24, 12 hours. I'm starting to get a little concerned about that.
A little nervous, yeah.
Yeah. But I do find, also back to your point about the zombie bills. I love that term, the zombie bills that keep coming back. I've gotten so many questions in our legislative action about, you know, if such and such bill was tabled, does that mean it's dead? And I can't tell you how many times I've said, you know, a bill is not dead until we sine die. And, you know, legislators can vote to suspend the rules, to have a bill fly through, and deals can be made. So I think that's a really interesting point you bring up. So what are some of the highlights? You already mentioned Medicaid and continuing Medicaid. What are some of the other highlights that you've seen this legislative session?
Well, I don't know if it's a highlight, but it does seem to me that there seems to be some efforts. All of the lawmakers seem to understand that one of the few things that they have to do is come together around some meaningful property tax resolution, particularly aimed at residential property tax, and how homeowners have just really taken more than their fair share of the part of government that gets funded by property taxes. And I don't think any one of them wants to go home without having done something substantive on that. And so they have several bills that are, they're not just driving through, let's say, just one bill and say my way or the highway. There's a lot of there's a lot of negotiating going on with different parts. Some of these bills are real Rubik's cubes. I mean, they make Rube Goldberg look like a streamline, but and they have not gotten there yet, and it's been quite an education. I was never on that side of on that committee, and the people who serve on tax committee really do develop a specialized expertise on how the whole thing works. But the other thing in Montana is there's different charters at the local level that mean a solution for maybe 9 out of 10 counties is kryptonite for the other 1%. And that just hit the fan this week with the governor's property tax bill, when the city of Billings figured out that if they pass that bill as is, it blows a six million, almost $7 million hole in their public safety budget. And they would be laying off 24 police officers and 20 firefighters and countless park maintenance people and all kinds of city service providers. So that has been, it's a high point in a way, in that they are talking to each other, they're trying to work together. There are different ideas. Jonathan Carlin's House Bill 154 has a really good, meaningful, fair housing tax credit that targets relief to those who need it most. In other words, based on income, up to an annual income of $150,000. So it does include middle class taxpayers, and it also includes renters. And a lot of times, the governor's bill has property tax relief for long-term owners, landlords of rental units, but there's no guarantee that the people who they rent to would see that. But I guess it's a highlight that we're working through a really big issue and everyone understands. I'm not promising that the ultimate outcome is going to be a highlight, but I know they're still genuinely, I think, in a lot of good faith, talking to each other and working to try and bring some relief to homeowners on that issue.
Well, Margie, that wraps up our visit. Was there anything else that you had in mind that you wanted to share with us?
Well, I do want to end on a high point, but on the other hand, I just cannot stress enough the importance of our Constitution and having an independent third branch of government. Big Sky 55 Plus has made that a priority. We did a town hall on it, and it's available on our website, which I hope you can share with people. And then our next town hall will be on how to make Montana's tax system more fair. And it's going to be a good one too. So we're looking forward to helping educate voters on these important issues. And I'm just really glad you reached out and that I got to talk to all your great constituents and followers.
Well, we sure appreciate it. And Marky, what is your website?
It's Big Sky 55, spelled out the 55.org. So
Excellent.
you can.
BigSky55.org. Excellent. Okay, well, thank you so much for your time and all of your efforts to make Montana better. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, and hi to everyone out there in Podland.
All right.
All right.
Okay, bye-bye.